Imbalance IT Solutions provides a unique consulting approach to transform your organization's data, cybersecurity, and hybrid cloud environments. We would like to welcome you to our podcast series we call The Balancing Act, discussing complex digital transformation. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone. This is Michael Kaplan, Chief Technology Officer at Inbalance IT, bringing you episode 14 of the Balancing Act podcast titled Living on the Secure Services Edge. I get to play host again today and get to welcome back my guest, Ryan O'Halloran, our VP of Security Strategy here at Inbalance. Ryan specializes in both cybersecurity advisory, architecture, design, you know, wears a lot of different hats here at Inbalance. Today, we're going to discuss the latest developments around securing end users in the age of AI and contrasting the advantages and disadvantages of performing security operations either through, you know, your traditional cloud proxy networks or natively inside a user's browser, and how that leads to different security outcomes that people might care about. Ryan, welcome. Appreciate you taking the time today.
Of course. Thank you, Michael.
So first, you know, before I jump into all my questions, I think maybe you can help me with a couple of definitions for our listeners out there and really kind of talk through, like, what is secure services edge? What is, you know, I mentioned browser, but like, what is an enterprise browser? Let's just start with a couple of those like simple definitions, and then we can kind of layer on some of the additional questions that I'll have today.
Yeah, no problem. So we'll start with secure services edge, because I think that's kind of the, well, let's start with the goal, right? Yeah. I think the goal is, and obviously since COVID, this has become extremely acute, right? Mm-hmm. How do we protect our users at any edge with the same level of security and provide them the same level of performance? I think that's the...
You're referring to that in the context of, hey, we all used to be in an office.
Yes.
You know, 5 days you know, a week, and now everybody's distributed.
Totally. And when I think of edges, you know, I think of remote users. They can be coming out of a coffee shop, right? You can think of private data centers. You think of public cloud, right? There's all these different areas, and there tends to be boundaries between those that don't have similar capabilities. Or if you try to make that happen, it's far too complex. So think of it as sort of a roaming capability, where wherever I am as a person, or wherever I'm working out of, whether it's remotely through something private, publicly, and, you know, something like that, that my security is going to be equivalent to the expectations of the business and the expectations of the business's partners or customers. And the way that that has been performed, like traditionally, right, when people were in the office and there wasn't those edges on the outside, was, okay, well, now I can turn on my firewall, and my next-gen firewall has all these features, and I have endpoints and devices that aren't leaving the network that I can control, and I'm probably not letting a whole bunch of external contractors and third parties and that access my network, or if I am, I'm a little less worried about it because the threats weren't as rampant as they are today, and the attacks weren't as sophisticated. So since then, there has to be some way that I can centralize this logic of, okay, I want to protect the user from malware. I want to protect the user from bad content, right, and filter that content. I want to be able to help the user define sanctioned and unsanctioned access before they go into something that they're not supposed to per company policy, right? Sure. Things like that. And in order to do that equivalently, there's kind of been two historical options. One option is, okay, now you're outside of the data center, so I'm going to give you a VPN. Mm-hmm. But then what happens is then you have to fully tunnel them, meaning that they're logging in through the private data center to then access the internet under its governance and then pulling it back. And the problem with that is now you don't have direct internet access anymore. You have a bottleneck. So, and that tends to lead to lack of productivity. It tends to lead to, frustration, quite honestly, on the end user. And now with cloud applications that fall outside of that, you're not hosting everything. So there has to be a way to govern when you're actually just using internet access in general from, let's say, a browser to go to a software as a service application like a Salesforce or a Microsoft 365 or something like that. So the idea around Secure Services Edge is, okay, there's a few things I need to do to get that level of visibility and control. First, I'm going to have to put an agent on everything, mm-hmm. a piece of software,
okay.
Right? Because now that piece of software, in order to travel with the user, has to live on that workstation or that laptop, right? Second, that software is going to have to scale security functions, and it can't do that on its own inside of the computer, right? The computer itself is only going to have so much horsepower, right? And it should be running the applications that the user is conducting business on and not security functions, at least to the degree possible. So the idea with Secure Services Edge is that agent will actually redirect your traffic then to a cloud-powered network.
Okay.
That performs all of those security functions you used to perform maybe just in the firewall and then on all your policies for your workstations and all those other things.
So that was that cloud proxy network that you were talking about.
Yeah. So that's the cloud proxy network aspect of it. And that's not a bad thing, but there's a few things that have to be done to get the level of visibility to actually control what users are doing for applications that aren't privately hosted. Like, for instance, allowing them access into, the corporate Microsoft Office 365 and OneDrive for business, but not for OneDrive personal.
Sure.
Or not for Google personal, right? All for in the hopes of keeping the data where it belongs. If it's business data, it stays in the business bubble. If it's my stuff, I'm going to allow it so that you're not upset, but I'm going to put some boundaries around that, some guardrails around that.
The traditional data loss prevention, data leak prevention techniques.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And I think that the concept around driving the cloud is powerful. So now you do have the ability to conduct a lot of these security functions like the cloud firewall, and the cloud content filtering, and the cloud data leak prevention, and all these things that you used to chain with different appliances or stuff all over the place. You can do that now in a single pass in the cloud, but in order to get the visibility to actually control things, you have to see what's going on in encrypted traffic. And that's the thing. Right. So we're used to when traffic is encrypted, the devices and the systems that are securing it can't make decisions around what user does this belong to. Is this a sanctioned cloud application or is this a unsanctioned cloud application? In other words, I just see that you're sending something to Microsoft. I don't know if it's personal or professional.
Sure.
You know, I don't know what you're doing exactly to be able to block that in real time. Or to provide policy in real time. Think of it as making an injection, so to speak. And in order to do that, you have to do what's called break and inspect, right? In the traditional hardware model, you would be able to take all of that traffic, break the traffic, inspect the traffic, and the hardware would do that job. Well, now that has to be done at that endpoint. So the problem is there's a tax for that too. Even though you're not sending all your traffic over through your VPN tunnel, you do have to open up that traffic, so to speak, analyze it, provide policy around it, and then close it back up. Right?
So it's like an approved man-in-the-middle attack.
It is exactly legitimately a man-in-the-middle attack, only for a good purpose. So basically, you have to have somebody in the middle or the proxy that's going to drive all of these security functions. And that takes a lot of effort. And it's also complex because applications work differently. So it's not that it doesn't work. To me, I think one of the most important things that I want to convey, though, is the coverage is not nearly 100%.
Sure.
Because what ends up happening is our most important applications that suffer from this tax, like collaboration tools and the things that we use 90% of the day, right? Video, cloud storage, right? All these other things that aren't only web applications where, you know, all the work's being done somewhere else. Those are where the threats are, the majority of them. right? When attackers steal your data, they try to offload or upload or exfiltrate that data to one of these private instances of OneDrive or Google or somewhere that you're not allowing. And in order to differentiate between those two, you have to have that encryption turned on. So there's providers out there that can do a really good job of capturing some of the traffic. But my argument is that we're in a world now where the majority of the threats actually live in the traffic we're bypassing. And that's, so in other words, what you get out of that is you get good content filtering. Maybe you can maybe get like a firewall on the cloud, right? And stuff like that. But when it comes to the things we're most concerned with, like what sensitive data goes where, you know, and things like that, you have to have that visibility. There's just no way I can stop you from putting a social security number into some web application unless I'm that man in the middle you described, right?
So that brings up a good question. Would you say then that given most applications today are not like thick internal applications that you're creating an executable to run on a device, but are, you know, typically web-based, does that make the browser then, you know, along with the user, that new perimeter? Or, you know, help me maybe understand kind of the different approach that an enterprise browser solution attempts to take to kind of tackle a similar problem.
I love that you said, is the browser the new perimeter? Because I've heard that, right? And I will say identity still is the perimeter, sure. Right? And one of the things with an enterprise browser is it leverages an authenticated session. Okay. Right. So your security around identities, first and foremost, I would say, is still the most important thing in cybersecurity. What you have access to, validating you're really who you are, and allowing the access only to the things that you really need. Right. And you can leverage that in the browser, because what's happening is if that security is happening in the browser itself, it's already decrypting all of the traffic.
Sure.
It does that by design. It controls the presentation layer of everything that you're doing. So it takes encrypted traffic by the time it gets to you, decrypts it so that you can work with it. So what that means to me is if we're in a world that's majority going to be accessing web applications, and the browser is the majority of the way we do our work, not all, right? Not in all cases. There's still those thick applications you're talking about where they're hard installed on my system, or I do need to still remote through the VPN, or maybe I got to use a virtual desktop or something like that. And that's why it's neither is perfect, right? Neither the SSE or the browser.
So do you view them then as potentially complementary, where, hey, most of the, you know, traditional pain points within your historical cloud proxies, your true kind of SSEs, do you view that as, you know, hey, that will still solve a few of my problems for applications and services that are not, you know, fully web-based or require a little bit of nuance there, where, you know, for like the true kind of data loss, data leak prevention functionality, an enterprise browser is a good complement to all of the additional value that your traditional SSE solutions also provide?
Yeah, I view them totally as complementary at this point. Okay. However, I do think the browser-based element of security is underestimated in terms of how much use case there really is, right? Yeah. So a lot of folks hear enterprise browser and they're like, oh, that's, you know, like bleeding edge. And to a degree, right, it is newer, but it's not brand new. It's proven. It's in some of the largest organizations in the world. It's reduced some of their VDI. It's given their users a better experience. And it's provided that additional coverage that SSE solution, break and inspect old model, has not historically. But as you mentioned, there's a line there in the sand because you still have corporate assets and you still have to control those devices. And you still have to provision what that device access looks like. So ultimately there's, hey, I need to control these devices granularly and what these devices have on them, my antivirus and all those other traditional things. EDR is what I mean. But, you know, legacy, traditionally, it's like the modern antivirus. So you still need to do all of that stuff You know, that stuff is not happening in an enterprise browser. It's not happening in an SSE. There's still endpoint protection and mobile device management and all those other things we need to do for those managed devices. But if you think about it in the unmanaged world, where we have those people from the outside coming into your organization, that provides a tremendous time to value for those individuals to get up and running in a secure services edge type of scenario, because I can basically have them download the browser. I can simply diversify what access looks like for something in our organization versus draw a boundary for everything else they're doing, even though I have no control over their device. And even though I can't manage that device, I can set some rules around the device must meet at least this criteria. So think about it as you got a bouncer in the club and they don't allow, they don't allow somebody with shorts to come in, right?
Okay.
I can say, if you don't have, if you don't have pants, you can't access, right? I can't force them to wear pants, right? That could be the equivalent of saying, you have your patches up to date. You have this right, this particular endpoint detection and response, right? Something like that. And that's called posturing.
Okay.
So the idea is there should be a minimum amount of criteria where even if I can't control it, I can at least mitigate it, right? And then only allow you access to what I have that's sensitive under my own circumstances.
Okay.
And I think the enterprise browser works well for that.
Sure. Yeah. It just reminded me of the old days back when I was a network admin and needed to occasionally remote in to do kind of late night technical support. And, laptops were, sometimes available, sometimes not. So sometimes I had to use my own personal device, and it always had to do a level of device check to make sure that if I'm going to VPN in on a non-corporate device, I at least pass some level of posture checking there. So that certainly seems helpful to, be able to send, hey, Mr. or Mrs. Contractor, download this browser. I've provisioned a set of credentials versus, hey, let me coordinate sending you a corporate approved device or spinning up an entire VDI workstation.
Yeah, just shipping so you a laptop with agents all over it and then letting them call you when nothing works.
Just to pull up a browser, and I'm even thinking in certain situations in more like manufacturing use cases where some of these third-party contractors are just coming in to service a piece of industrial control equipment, they're not going to use a corporate device for something like that because maybe there's specific tools or functions. But hey, if I can give you this browser and that's how you're going to interact with any system in here, at least you can maintain some semblance of control on potentially some of these, systems that you have to do, low level patching and updating for, but are also critically important to, maybe a consumer packaged goods company, a manufacturing company, a healthcare company, hospital or pharmaceutical company that does some level of, IoT or OT type functionality. So I think that's helpful
huge.
To kind of wrap my mind around what are the potential complementary use cases there. And it certainly seems that from an onboarding standpoint, if I can do that, that's always helpful. And then particularly, maybe one question I do have is thinking about mobile devices. Mm-hmm. How, does SSE play well with mobile devices, or is that where, hey, a person's personal cell phone, but they, get paid, pinged to do some level of work function. They can do it from a, I don't know if these enterprise browsers have mobile versions of them. That seems like certainly a much nicer way than, hey, family, I got to hit the pause button. I got to go back home and go get a corporate approved device or somehow log into a VDI session remotely. Help me understand maybe from a mobile device standpoint, which the proliferation is certainly there. What kind of use cases can you see in terms of, quickly onboarding or accessing corporate applications from devices that you might not own, like a person's personal cell phone?
Yeah, I think that so you nailed something there. I think that when it comes to like a bring your own device for mobile devices, your iPads, your iPhones, your Android devices, things like that, that's where even endpoint detection, your endpoint detection, just your basics before even SSE starts to kind of blur the line a little bit and being difficult to protect that device. Enterprise browser, in my opinion, is the winner there. And
Okay.
it's because it's a browser, right? You can basically provision that through your app store, just like anything else, as opposed to all the configuration that you can't get away with on, let's say, a Windows or a Linux system or things like that, where it's, more your traditional endpoint. And you could still provide those same boundaries, almost the same security outcomes on the mobile devices as you could your laptops or servers or things like that.
And could
And
it do that same level of posture checking of, hey, is my device jailbroken? At which point, no, you're not going to be allowed to use this device to do that function because you decided to, get a little fancy with your operating system.
yeah, you can,
Okay.
and that's what's super cool about it is you can control. I think there's three primary things that SSE really improves on. One of them is reducing the attack surface, right? So with remote access, whether it's coming from your phone or your laptop or wherever you're coming from, instead of your traditional VPN, you're no longer, because the way the technology works, you're in an always-on scenario where you're not concerned with, is the VPN on? Did I connect? Do I have access to the right things? You're also, the IT person's not concerned with, do you have access to too much? Because what generally happens is they provide unfettered access to maybe an entire network segment as opposed to that one application that contractor needs,
Sure.
right? So right there, you've reduced the SAC attack surface significantly. So instead of, hey, from whatever device I'm at when I'm remote accessing something, as opposed to me remote accessing an entire network, you're first checking my authentication up front, which maybe you used to do, but then you're continuing to check it the entire time. You're also first checking, does my device meet the criteria, even, to access this, even if I don't have the mobile device management on that iPhone or on that Android,
Sure.
which typically you don't, right? And in a lot of cases, you don't, businesses don't want to provision or sell, I'm sorry, provision or provide another, mobile carrier and mobile device and put MDM on it and do all these other things. They want to provide that flexibility and they have to in some cases when it's external, right? So to provide that kind of consistent access and no longer expose that remote access server that the users are connecting through to the internet, right there just limits so much of what the attacker can do because they can't see it anymore. And if they were to steal the user's identity, there's less they could do. Right? So that's one huge important thing. I think the second thing is around the data boundaries, right? So if you're on your phone or if you're on your laptop or if you're on your workstation, to be able to say, listen, you can download or move things from, let's say, the one web application, let's say a Salesforce or something like that, to Microsoft 365, but that can never actually live on your laptop. That can
Okay.
never actually live on your mobile device, right? Which is something that many, many companies have a problem with, because if you're not managing the device, it might not be encrypted, right? You don't have the ability to remote wipe it. You don't have any of those types of, those ways of preventing the theft and the data leakage because you're not necessarily in control, right? And I think in that way, it provides a tremendous level of control over if you don't have that, you're not getting in, right? But also the flexibility for you to be able to go out and get and use what you want.
Sure.
So I think that's another big one, right? Because you don't want the data living in areas that it doesn't belong. If you only need to move it from site A to site B, why am I downloading it to my system or my mobile phone or whatever and then uploading it to site B? It doesn't need to do that, right? It can just go in between. And Enterprise Browser has a really good functionality of being able to define what storage is allowed and what storage is not allowed, and being able to wrap those in a bubble. And to me, that leads to more productivity, because then I'm not blocking users from doing the other 70% things they want to do, but I'm making sure for the things that matter, they're doing it the way that I am envisioning them working and securely, right?
Sure. So it seems like in general that kind of time to value for a lot of these kind of, you know, singular use cases, or even just, you know, broadly for like knowledge workers that may just need the, you know, browser access to do data entry or function within a small subset of applications, that can certainly provide a lot of value. And then for like your horsepower workers, your power users, your users that potentially need to access a lot of different systems and services, maybe some, you know, full thick applications, that's where you'll still maybe leverage the enterprise browser just for better security and break and inspect use cases of understanding where your data is coming from, but then still layer on the benefits of what your traditional SSE solutions can have. And it seems like maybe, you know, from an initial jumping off point, the enterprise browser can provide probably some of those faster, you know, time to value use cases, especially with, hey, just in time access for, you know, a person who's coming on site to do, you know, some level of troubleshooting in my environment. Great. I can do that a lot faster of, you know, I'll put an asterisk around, you know, process for getting, you know, user credentials quickly created, because sometimes that can take, you know, acts of Congress in certain instances. But, you know, I just like to highlight that, you know, there are good use cases for each, and sometimes, you know, for ease of access, it certainly seems like the enterprise browser can provide that best bang for your buck. But now, you know, I maybe want to shift a little bit as we start to get close to wrapping up. I know we briefly highlighted, you know, the world of AI, and I think that we get punished if we don't mention that at least once a podcast now.
Of course.
You know, as we shift into the world of chatbots, people wanting to leverage LLMs, whether that's an internally created solution or leveraging your general OpenAI, ChatGPT, Gemini, you know, what do you see as the best way of governing that overall data flow? Is it leveraging, you know, the enterprise browser, so I can just say, hey, before this, you know, prompt is even executed, let me stop it in its tracks and do something? Or do you still send it to the secure services edge, have it do, you know, maybe do more hard pressed, hey, you can't even access this particular, you know, version of ChatGPT or whatever it is, because here are corporate approved, you know, applications or chatbots or agentic solutions that you're allowed to interact with. You know, maybe help me understand a little bit more in the world and context of SSE and enterprise browser. What do you think makes the most sense for, you know, probably the majority of use cases out there today in the kind of large language model space?
Sure. Yeah. So one thing that both of those solutions, Enterprise Browser and Secure Services Edge, have the capability, right, of blocking things in real time from going into the wrong model, right? Mm-hmm. So for instance, but I want to point out that it's time to value, right? These things take time and they're difficult to manage and stuff like that. So if you want to get to that point, you have to be able to get to that user. You have to be able to get that user to the point of complete coverage. And sure. what I think about with coverage is that most of these AI elements, right, when we're talking about a user using AI responsibly, they're attached to the browser. They're plugins, right? They're the different models, right? That's the first thing that happens. It pops out in your browser, right, and stuff like that. And it's not just that it's in the browser, but it's often the users on the unmanaged devices have more control over what they can install. So on those unmanaged device scenarios, they can install these additional plugins, they can use these other AI things, they can use these note takers, right, all this other stuff. And unless you have great coverage, because there is so much of that stuff out there, it's the user will always circumvent, or at least in my experience, circumvent the controls that are more difficult on them, which SSE typically lends to have a little bit more complexity, right, on them.
Sure.
But the important thing there is that if you get access into that encrypted traffic, now you can block it before it happens, even if you don't own that application. Now, if a user's typing in a field, right, into LinkedIn, a sensitive number or a credit card number or something like that, or they're taking company proprietary information, trying to write a spreadsheet or trying to write a PowerPoint or something like that, and they dump it into ChatGPT, you can stop them before the model learns of it, and it's, and you've missed that chance forever, and say, you cannot do this, right? You cannot put that sensitive information that we've classified into that model. Or you can say, sorry, we allow AI, which was what we should be saying, but maybe that's not the AI that we allow. Maybe we don't allow Gemini and we do allow Copilot, you know, for business, right? For on the security side. Sure. So to be able to sort of redirect so that the users start to actively use the AI that your company wants them to use and embrace that versus kind of whatever they find, right? Which is what I think sometimes businesses are struggling with now, is they don't know the shadow AI. They don't know all these different things that are happening. I just think that the coverage there within the browser and the tendency for AI to be embedded in the browser where the risk is the highest at that endpoint user, it just makes sense, right? In an enterprise browser context.
So that's where I'm thinking, and maybe correct me if my thought process is off here, where there still will be a use case for complementary solutions, particularly on corporate managed devices, in kind of unmanaged use cases where, you know, again, it still seems like the enterprise browser makes the most sense. But to prevent a user from saying, okay, I use the approved enterprise browser for corporate-based things, well, now I'm frustrated that it's not giving me the response that I want, or hey, maybe the system's overwhelmed and, you know, queries or prompts are taking a lot longer to respond. Let me hop over to, you know, launch Safari or Chrome or Opera or whatever browser I have potentially installed, or Edge that I've installed on my device, but now I would just want to go to regular ChatGPT. Is that where still your traditional SSE boundaries can also help with the, I'm now just trying to circumvent and use a different tool because I like how it responds to me a little bit better? Is that, am I thinking about that correctly in terms of how they can still be complements in your traditional corporate managed device sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Because you're right. You know, they're going to try to circumvent either, right? And there's only so much control you're going to have to push all the traffic one direction or another. And in the case of the endpoint kind of secure service edge solution, then it's providing that level of control regardless of browser, regardless of application type, regardless of, you know, and that level of management and control across anything that that system can do is unique to doing that at the endpoint itself and not in the browser. And that's where you still get stuck with, okay, I need to use a virtual desktop because it puts all the control on the entire system, all those things in my hands, right? As opposed to the browser alone. And there still is a lot of things that fall outside of that browser. There's user rights that you necessarily can't control when they're coming in from devices you don't manage. And it's another trap. You know, it's another trap you can fall into. So to me, I think the most important thing is that you're not dismissive of the enterprise browser, and you're looking at how you can rationalize the tool set you probably already have with SSE, and find a reason why not the browser. Sure. Because if you do that, then you'll find certain use cases that make perfect sense, that you'll probably get a financial return on, that you'll probably get more coverage on, that'll probably be easier for the user to use for those particular use cases. But granted, those use cases are only a piece of the pie. I mean, in order for us to get to 95% of the use cases, we're 10 years away from that, right? That would mean everybody's, the browser is truly the new perimeter, right? Because that's like the new workstation, and we're not there. We're not close to there, right? So I think it's a matter of responsibly thinking about how you're operating and how you're managing the network so that you can get this secure edge, right, regardless of where you're at, out to your users as quickly as possible, out to your users as easily as possible with the most coverage, and doing it in a financially responsible way. And I think you need both to be able to really truly wrap it up at this point, right? Unless we get to the point where the browser, you know, becomes really not just an enterprise browser anymore, and it becomes encompasses the entire system, right? So both of them really need to fill in each other's gaps at some point.
Sure.
And the browser alone is not going to do it. It's going to be those companies taking that method, I think, of technology and extending it to outside the browser, because you need to cover that. You need to cover that. I can't say you don't. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it absolutely does. I think it's important, and I've seen you in engagements with our clients around helping provide that overall, you know, execution of vision, you know, understanding what do I have today? Where are the gaps? What are the use cases that are the most critical to accomplishing that task? And understanding that there likely will be some level of overlap between, you know, solutions today, and that's because they, you know, there is a decent level of that kind of, you know, Venn diagram of overlap there. But the things that, you know, an SSE solution does really well, there could still be gaps that the enterprise browser can't do today. And that's when you have to build that strategic thought process with our clients of understanding what are those use cases, what makes the most sense to accomplish the task, and making sure that they integrate well. And I think that that's the most critical, you know, thing with any of this, is the goal is to provide ideally a frictionless, or at least a reduced level of friction, but having enough there that we maintain semblance of control on the data that we have, which is, you know, the most important thing for a business, is their intellectual property, the data, you know, sensitive data, things that can get you fined, things that could be disruptive to the business if it were to be somehow exposed or exfiltrated. But, you know, giving the users the ability to use the things that help make them more productive in their day, the AI co-pilots of the world, the chatbots, and I think that that's really important, is we're trying to provide, you know, businesses want to be able to provide that benefit, but they want to provide that benefit securely. And I think that that's where you're helping clients ideate on what makes the most sense there. And I think that that's the, you know, probably the big thing in my personal takeaway from our conversation, is understanding, okay, I can see how there could be some overlap and maybe some confusion in this space, but it's important to think about it in a way that you can't just necessarily buy one solution to solve all of your problems. It's a process that you have to be able to integrate and also help with the users and their overall training. How do you see that evolve, maybe if you were to take your crystal ball over the next few years? How do you see this space continuing to evolve? Because, you know, I've seen some of the marketing from both of these solutions. It's, you know, they can do everything. And when you really kind of peel back the onion, they can't. And it would be great if they could and everybody could, you know, shrink down to a single tool to rule them all. But it just doesn't feel like that's necessarily in the cards just yet.
Yeah, you know, and it is complicated, right, to make these choices. But here's what I would say. I believe that at this point, there is no more secure way to manage a user than if you have that device managed by you with the whole secure service edge thing, right? Everything's all ready to go, right? That's ideal, right? Because you have complete management, but that comes with cost, that comes with friction, that comes with operational, you know, frustration and all these other things, complexity. For that segment though, that's unmanaged, for that segment though, that's maybe a frontline worker that's only accessing email and things like that. For that segment, that's kind of your bring your own device, right? Or something like that. I think that those areas, you can probably with the browser type solution, get there more quickly and probably more cost effectively. But in general, we are not in an area where the devices that we manage, you know, we can completely cover from a device perspective, from, you know, all around, without kind of the more traditional model. And I think what has to happen is it's not just going to be an SSE or a browser, right? It's going to be a medley. I think that the browser companies are getting the coverage and some of those other things from the traffic that they can inspect for those particular applications, but they're not getting everything else.
Okay.
And the SSE solutions can get most of it, but you can't do it without a level of control that you don't necessarily get to have.
Sure.
So what's the question is, I think, in the future is how are these things going to extend to each other where we can simplify probably the power of the cloud and blend that with the adoption of more browser-based applications over time, which is part of it too, right? We're not completely in the cloud yet. And at some point, those things will start to even out where the technology, I think, will have more coverage, right? But also there'll be more use of SaaS applications and cloud adoption and things like that, which is now very much hybrid. So as we see those users kind of go that direction, I think there'll be a tapering off and then we're going to get to like that 90%, you know, coverage point in, you know, in another 10 years. But in the meantime, it's like, how do I get that time to value? Operationally, financially, right, and technically, it's really, you know, if I have complete control, I think I can get the most coverage off the SSE. If I don't have complete control, I think I can probably get the most coverage off the browser. And that's just a great way to start looking at it, to basically weed out some of the use cases maybe that you're hearing in the enterprise browser, and then you're even seeing enterprise browser fold into the SSE companies as well.
I was about to say as much.
You know,
starting to see
they're offering them,
the fact
too,
that
they're buying those companies,
encroaching a little bit. Yeah, they're encroaching a little bit on their turf. It's like, okay, well, if I can't beat them, I'll join them, and now it's just a part of a portfolio of options.
I mean, and we still need firewalls, right? We still have edges in the data center and in corporate offices and things like that. The enterprise browser is not covering that, right? So when you think of SASE, which is that bigger picture, you know, for the hardware we still need and things like that, there's still very much a use case for that, and those things can integrate extremely well. So I think that, you know, that's kind of the difference, I think, to weigh in. And over time, hopefully it becomes a little bit easier. But part of that, our applications need to be modernized in order to really fully take advantage of that and unify those things as fully as we'd like to make it easier.
No, that's great. You know, and really do appreciate your time, Ryan. You know, the last thing that I always like to do when I'm hosting these things is, you know, give me some sort of recommendation. What's a good like book, movie, TV show, anything kind of outside of what we do and interact with on a day-to-day basis? Like what's something that you've, you know, seen, read, listened to recently that you're like really, really into and passionate about?
Oh man. So it's more leisurely, I think, than technical. So, you know, on my end, I'm a music guy. So I've been really trying to go outside of the box from the primary mainstream type of things and get more into what the latest music is that's out there, right? And then also listen to podcasts that are more business focused.
Okay.
It's tough to land on a specific one, but I think one thing that I'm very interested in right now that's keeping me inspired is around the operational technology elements of companies. Sure. And there's a book I have, and shame on me for not knowing the author, but there's a book that I have that I just started, and it's just helping me conceptualize, you know, we have all these devices all over the place, and it's not necessarily, you know, it's not necessarily like you're, you know, a nuclear reactor or something like that. It's your cameras and all these other things. And there's a level of security on those where, guess what? They don't have a browser. Guess what? You can't install an agent on them, right? And things like that. And I'm curious, knowing that those smart devices are going to continue to be a part of our personal lives, how much they're going to blend into our professional lives, right? And then we're going to have to think about that differently as well. So, those two things, you know, I'm trying to enjoy myself and take a breather from the IT stuff with, you know, listening to some of the non-mainstream things and just going into your Spotify, right, and clicking on maybe the New Music Friday, right, yep. I believe is what it's called, versus the top hits, right, and then getting exposed to some of that because, you know, that can be good for the soul. And then technically kind of just start to understand, you know, where things are going, because you're introducing that risk in your personal life. Yeah, so, you know, absolutely. And that's kind of hopefully a good summary of some of the things I'm doing.
No, I appreciate that. You know, it's always fun. You know, for me, the one thing I like to do, my wife just does not like watching movies. It's really tough. It's like pulling teeth trying to get her to like sit down. So I'm always on the hunt for movies, if I've seen them or not, that are like slightly off the beaten path, because she usually likes a little bit of like a darker, twistier story or something that maybe like skews a little weird. So it's been fun thinking about movies that I've seen before that maybe I haven't watched in 20 years. So started to go down the rabbit hole of some of Charlie Kaufman's movies. He wrote, you know, Being John Malkovich, Adaptation, Her, At least I think he wrote Her.
Good stuff.
And getting her to watch, you know, a couple of those movies, because, you know, they're a little bit different and a little bit weird. And usually that's, you know, the fun thing that I like to do with, you know, some downtime that I've had recently. But
yeah,
I like, well, Ryan, that too. You know, appreciate the time as always. And just to wrap it up here, Inbalance can be your guide for education, workshops, briefings, project and solution rationalization, and we can help you execute on your security strategy. Reach out to us today to learn more at www.inbalanceit.com. We appreciate you listening, invite you to come back to our next episode. If you like this episode, please give us a 5-star rating, like and subscribe, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thanks all.
Inbalance IT Solutions wants to thank you for listening and invite you to join us for the next episode in our podcast series. Remember, Inbalance IT Solutions can help you transform your business's technology, and we welcome you to reach out to us for more information on our website at inbalanceit.com. See you on the next one.